Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast development and monetization of compelling IoT applications. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Rod McLean from Ayla Networks and Matthew Basic from Flexera Software. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentations. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Our speakers today are Rod McLean and Matthew Basic. Rod is a Senior Director of Product Marketing at Ayla Networks. He has over 20 years of experience in high-tech enterprise marketing with industry-leading companies such as Genesys, AmDocs, Aspect Communications, and Hitachi. Most recently, Rod was the Director of Solutions Marketing for Genesys, a market-leading provider of contact center solutions, where he is responsible for outbound messaging, positioning, and go-to-market strategies for the Genesys cloud-based contact center solution suite. Matthew Basic is the Vice President of Product Management at Flexera Software. He is responsible for products sold to software publishers and high-tech manufacturers. He gets energized talking about licensing, entitlements, and best business practices. He has worked with hundreds of software publishers and hardware manufacturers starting in 1994 when he wrote an entitlement management system for one of the largest publishers of the world. His background includes implementing SAP, for then the largest software reseller in the world, manufacturing software package boxes, running licensing call centers, CIO for international companies, and co-founding of an entitlement management solution sold to large and small hardware software suppliers. Welcome, gentlemen. I believe Rod will be starting it off today. Rod, the floor is yours.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Kurt, and welcome, everybody. Really glad that you've been able to take some time out of your schedule today and participate on this webinar with Matthew and myself and talk about monetization around IoT, which is a topic that's kind of near and dear to our hearts here, those of us that are in the IoT space. So without further ado, let me go ahead and jump in here. I wanted to kick things off before we really got into, you know, the topic of monetization and give you a little bit of background on who Ayla is so that, you know, as we go through the conversation today, you'll have a little bit of context, right, in terms of the direction we're coming at things and you know, kind of describe some of the thought process that comes with our approach here. So what Ayla is we are an enterprise B2B software platform as a service for the Internet of Things. We all know the Internet of Things is a very broad space, you know, everything from oil refineries to automobiles to wearable devices. And generally the segment that we have chosen to focus in on is really on the manufacturers and service providers, by and large, folks that are making products that would typically go into the connected home space or what we call the light commercial space. What you see on the screen here is a diagram. Architecture diagram of the Ayla solution, and we have software kind of all ends of the spectrum when we think about things from an IoT perspective. We have software that would go into the end device, which would be indicated by those icons on the left there, so things like washing machines, refrigerators, glucose monitor. We have our software that's actually embedded into communication chips, so we have partnerships with a lot of leading hardware companies like Broadcom, Qualcomm, Marvell, NXP, to have our software embedded into those products so that when a manufacturer decides to create a connected product, they can simply drop one of those off-the-shelf communication modules into the product. Then it makes a secure connection to our cloud environment to where the manufacturer can apply all kinds of great additional value-added services, things like reporting and analytics and rules engines, notification services. And then at the tail end of the spectrum, we have software that goes at the mobile level So Android and iOS libraries. So, you know, generally, you know, we focus, like I said, really on the smart home space or like commercial space. So with that, let me go ahead and the slides are moving here. And we'll dive into the topic of monetization. The smart home, right? This is something that's been, you know, talked about in, you know, the news quite a bit lately. You see some pretty big sensational numbers associated with this. In terms of like the dollar revenue, you know, we're already in the billions of dollars in terms of, you know, devices that are shipped. One recent report I read from Markets and Markets had that going from about 20 billion today to about 56 billion. By 2020, so in a mere 4 years, we'll be more than doubling the amount of connected devices that we'll see in the marketplace. So, you know, despite the fact that you know, the obvious convenience that these connected products deliver in terms of being able to enable homeowners who have greater control of these devices, there's still a little bit of a challenge or still a bit of a struggle, I think, in terms of really defining the additional value proposition that these connected products have when we start to try to drive these things to more of a mainstream approach, right? You know, innovation around, you know, the IoT space over the last several years has really resulted in a wave of these connected technologies, you know, connected products really hitting the market. Again, everything from wearables, you know, digital health devices, connected cars. We're starting to see more and more of these popping up. And as we start to look specifically more at the connected home space, right, within the home, we're seeing appliance makers that are starting to integrate, you know, wireless technologies like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to enable remote monitoring and kind of the whole aspect of digital content integration and other value-added services into these products as well. And really what this has all meant is that there's a net effect of, you know, new connectivity across these different things that we're finding in our homes. This really meant an explosion of options for the consumer, right, and possibly new revenue streams after the initial sale for these product manufacturers. This is really what we're going to dig into as we start to go through the conversation today. You know, however, you know, there's definitely, you know, potential of, you know, highly connected consumers for manufacturers, retailers and consumer package good companies and service providers. This is really largely untapped as of today. And there's a couple issues we need to dig into, right, as we start to look in this, right? One of them is really around, you know, the need for the industry to unify around a set of technology standards that really enable interoperability across the different devices and product ecosystems. If we look at the market today, there's a ton of different devices out there that are using different technologies for communications. And, you know, in certain cases that may be good, but we definitely think that you need to have interoperability across those different devices. We've already started to see some market consolidation around technology frameworks. You know, we had the recent acquisition of Universal Plug and Play, or UPnP, by the Open Internet Consortium. That was one example of this consolidation. A second major axis that's really transforming this is where companies are beginning to shift towards operating around a service-first model. And again, this is another thought that we'll kind of explain in greater detail as we go through this. You know, well-defined API strategies and structural shifts in business operations around long-term customer relationships and the creation of new core competencies around data analytics and cloud computing all require a significant amount of time and investment for these manufacturers. So in terms of specific challenges, right, there's four that I kind of wanted to dig into during the course of the conversation today. Number one, really, you know, the service-centric monetization models are really difficult for manufacturers. A lot of the traditional product manufacturers, and these are a lot of the folks that we talk with, they do certain things really well, right? You know, they are aces at hardware design. They're very good at channel development, at marketing, at doing that post-sale, you know, support of the products that they create. And while this is, you know, a good foundation for success in selling products, when we start to look at IoT, there's a different set of core competencies that these manufacturers really need to start to grasp, right? And for some of them, it's a difficult transition, right? Creating new products, you know, that create a dual role as service providers is something that they're not used to, right? Selling products with, you know, limited market support is one thing, but when you start to look at, you know, the IoT and being able to cultivate, you know, that internal expertise, to develop these consistently or you know, consistently connected products, that can be managed, monitored, while also, you know, layering in new services, that's really a difficult challenge for a lot of these manufacturers. We've seen some success, you know, some big companies that have, adapted well to this, both like General Electric and Samsung. You know, they've been able to adapt to this, but by and large, a lot of the traditional manufacturers are still challenged by this, right? There's also a structural change for these companies, that are required to become to more of a service-centric model, right? Monetization models are built around IoT. They do require structural changes within the company, right? You know, going from that kind of more traditional model, well, hey, we sell a product, we support it if something goes wrong, is very different than going to the approach, you know, with the connected product where you essentially have a persistent relationship with that customer. So it's definitely something that a lot of the manufacturers are struggling to adapt with. Consumers are not necessarily always convinced, you know, that they want another service provider, right? They may already have, products that they're dealing with, you know, provided by service providers like a Comcast, for example. And they don't want, you know, to have to think of if I buy a washing machine, you know, from, Frigidaire, that that's also going to become a service provider that I'm going to need to deal with as well, right? So, you know, we're starting to see a little bit change is the demographic, right? Millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers even are starting to embrace, you know, these new technologies, things like touchscreen interfaces, you know, constant connectivity and the mobile app aspect of things. But at the same time, the vast majority of consumers are hesitant to change the nature of the relationship they have with the company, right? You know, I buy the product, I plug it in, I use it, but I don't really need to contact you unless something goes wrong with the product. So it's a change in, you know, view as well for the consumers. And then the fourth one is that retail and sales channels, you know, they really haven't evolved, I think, at the same level to kind of keep pace with this new technology and these connected products. And that's definitely a significant hurdle that's you know, impending the transition of a customer toward this connected consumer model. So consumers or the retail channels also need to adapt to this, right? It's a different way of doing business. A great example, right, if we were to pull one out is with televisions, right? The vast majority of the new digital TVs are coming as connected models, right? They have the embedded software in them that enable a variety of new customer-facing technologies. But by and large, consumers who purchase these products largely just see these screens as, you know, something to display existing video content, right? I'm just going to, you know, plug it in and watch my ESPN or watch the movies on Netflix. So, you know, the packaging and in-store displays have the benefit of, you know, all these app stores, but, you know, the TV manufacturers and their retail partners are really still trying to define how they can create more persistent value in a more service-centric relationship with their customers. Okay, so, you know, as we start to look at this changing relationship again in a little bit more detail, you know, the arrival of IoT and the, you know, connected, the concept of the connected intelligent home is really changing the way that consumers interact with these companies, which in turn is forcing these companies to, you know, change, you know, every part of their organization and the ecosystem, right? So if we look at the diagram on the screen here, we'll start going kind of from the top left and moving around clockwise. You know, the factory to front door and beyond. The extent of the traditional relationship with a consumer for any number of products typically reaches from, you know, the point of sale to the home. In the past, you know, subsequent interactions would really be, you know, if you had a negative, you know, interaction or a negative issue with that product, something broke, that would trigger an opportunity for that manufacturer then to interact with the customer and deliver some type of aftermarket support. Now, with the arrival of IoT, these manufacturers can now really expand that relationship and proactively look into the home and into the actual usage behavior to deliver relevant content and value-added services, right? So product companies really need to better understand how to service their customers from the time the product ships to the time it's actually sitting in the home and being used. Persistence and proactivity, right? So while consumer product companies have tried to maintain brand loyalty, and this is something they've done for decades, these relationships have, for the most part, remained distant, right, due to the fact that the manufacturer doesn't really have that frequent of interaction with the customer, right? In between, purchase decisions, that relationship, was really just becomes dormant, right? I mean, I don't only buy a refrigerator maybe once every 15 years, so I don't really have an reason to be interacting with the customer or, the manufacturer all that often, right? Now, connected devices, this is kind of changing that whole model, right? It's changing the nature of that, one and done relationship to something that's really persistent and proactive, right? Because these products are consistently are connected. The companies can now provide instant support before the customer even knows they need the support, right? For example, the being able to monitor the device and understand when, for example, a chiller on your refrigerator may start to fail, right? Now the manufacturer may know that beforehand and can actually notify the end consumer, hey, a part of your product is actually going to fail. We're going to dispatch somebody to repair that part before it actually fails. So it's a new way of looking at things. The fact that it's also data driven is also very important, right? Many common reactions to traditional consumer products, is when the adoption of a connected strategy is the realization that they're really unprepared for the level of data that they're getting. And this is something we see time and time again from the customers we work with. They've never had this level of data before, so once they start to get the data on these connected devices, they're kind of unsure what to do with it. They really don't have the core competencies in-house in many occasions to actually act upon that that data. So it's definitely a challenge for these guys. And finally, the fact that it's really an omni-channel relationship at this point, right? People are now, with these connected devices, you're able to get information from that device itself, right? It's no longer just kind of going into a store, purchasing a device, and that's it. The connected devices is really bringing, the services and bringing this maturation process to full circle, right? Is the connected products themselves are really, an integration between the mobile and the internet aspect of things. Okay, so when we look at the emergence of the IoT and the smart home, really it comes down to kind of four key areas in terms of the monetization model. And what we're going to do over the next few slides is actually start to kind of dive into this, right? It really represents, as we start to look at this, a significant opportunity for these companies, to solidify their current lines of business and expand into new adjacent businesses and open up new revenue streams, right? The primary, path towards monetization really falls into these four categories, support, commerce, data, and services. So let's go ahead and take a look at support, right? While many customers view support as simply the cost of doing business, enhanced support can actually result in direct revenue in the form of support services, right? And we've started to see this with customers that we're working with. Being able to provide, that strong and consistent support is probably, the best way in terms of enhancing or impacting customer retention, right? Now, the big challenge with, IoT-powered, customer support is one in which the experience becomes proactive, right? Where traditional customer support is reactive by nature, right? My product breaks and then I call support. With IoT, that's very different, right? Because now you're starting to use the analytics on the data that you're receiving, the real-time information to actually anticipate customer problems, and be able to proactively address those issues, right? By leveraging the power of these connected devices, being able to upgrade devices in the field to leverage new capabilities delivered through the software is also one of the key issues in terms of support, right? you know, now instead of a product that may go into the field and have a life cycle of 5 years, right, before, you know, it's no longer adaptable or useful within the home, these devices can have upgrades sent to them automatically, so it extends their life cycle, you know, within the consumer's home. So in terms of, you know, new approaches to commerce, right, so we move from the support aspect to commerce, the most important path to smart home monetization, really beyond the initial sale, is through new forms of commerce, right? The ability to direct consumers to purchase additional products, to purchase upgrades, or to purchase adjacent or, you know, other products that or services that may be ancillary, right, to what they originally purchased. Is significantly enhanced when this device is actually connected or is a smart device, right? Traditional consumer sales models, the manufacturers often rely on conventional sales and marketing methods to enable these aftermarket sales of their products or partner products. So things like coupons or loyalty programs or, you know, sending email or direct mail is really the way that they've traditionally approached that aspect of, you know, trying to drive additional revenue, right? Now, when a device is connected, the additional revenue opportunities actually come through, you know, the connected device itself. You know, good example is the automated, consumption, you know, and ordering of consumable, right? You know, we can look at the Amazon Dash example, right? That's one that probably most people are familiar with. It's a very visible, you know, example of this concept where consumers can automate the ordering of household supplies, you know, if it's laundry detergent or Kleenex or something like that, or food products, it can be automated through that process. And we actually have customers that are doing this today, right? A good example is a customer that we work with that does water softening devices, which would go into the connected home. And these water softening devices use salt as a consumable within the device to soften the water. By adding the sensors into this device to kind of monitor the level of that salt, they can proactively dispatch additional salt to the consumer's home directly once the device reaches a certain point, so that the device actually never runs out of salt, that the consumer always has this consumable device. So this is, again, one of the new approaches to commerce that is applicable with these products, right? And it's definitely attractive to the manufacturers, right, because it's a great form of revenue, right? You know, a lot of the consumer product companies have really kind of jumped on this capability, right? But it's key to note, right, that such initiatives the automated commerce aspect really require some significant coordination between the manufacturers, how they distribute their products, if it's an online storefront or if it's a retail channel, to enable the fulfillment of the consumable devices, right? And it's requiring the manufacturers to kind of, you know, provide some level of guidance or tools to their partners that they work with to make sure that everything works smoothly, right? At the end of the day, if, you know, you have this functionality to provide, you know, this automated commerce capability and it doesn't work well, then the consumer's going to have a negative impression of the product that you're selling. So from there, we'll dig into the data aspect of it, right? And we kind of touched on this briefly with the fact that a lot of the manufacturers that we work with today, connected products are providing them with a tremendous amount of detail in terms of how the device is being used and how the device is performing. And it's an area that they really never had to, or they've never had this type of information before. And it's funny, the first line on there on the chart here is in terms of the old way of providing surveys. I can't tell you the number of customers that we've actually gone out and engaged with that we ask them, well, how do you know how people are using your product? And they'll chuckle and they'll say, well, we have a focus group, right? So we ask people, you know, what they think, and that's how we get the information on how our product's being used, right? And by adding connectivity, that really changes things, right? No longer are you relying on a group of people to tell you what they like or don't like about your product. Now you can get essentially a near real-time data feed on the product itself, right? So you know what buttons people are pushing, what features they may be using, So it allows you as a manufacturer to then, you know, adapt your product to be, you know, something that's more in tune with what customers actually want. So, from our perspective, you know, the whole data aspect is really the key benefit of adding connectivity in this whole Internet of Things concept, right? And it's really kind of the big difference between, you know, the traditional models of, you know, product development and product sales, and the Internet of Things approach to selling these devices, right? You know, in some ways, you know, you can almost look at it, we've heard this comparison internally as well as, for those of you that are baseball fans in the field, the money ball approach to baseball, right? You know, traditionally a lot of things were done just kind of by gut feel, whereas now you're using actual data to make the decisions, in terms of how you approach your product development process. So it's a very interesting change, right? You know, harnessing the data from all these, connected products, though, does still remain to, a challenge for a lot of these guys. You know, largely because of the fact, as I mentioned, they don't necessarily have the in-house expertise, to take this data and actually make it actionable. And that, you know, without actionable data, the data is really not that much, that much of any good to you, right? So the question comes, do you build this expertise in-house? Or do you look to leverage a third-party platform, either a platform, you know, an IoT platform that has data analytics capabilities or potentially a third-party data analytics option to help you make sense of all this information, right? And these data-centric services, you know, is really one of the new opportunities for these connected device manufacturers, right? When the products reach scale, right, they start to ship in a tremendous volume, the customer data around usage, you know, can not only be valuable to, you know, the product manufacturer themselves, but it could be packaged, you know, for insights for, you know, partners they may have as well, right? You know, obviously there's issues around the data privacy and security issues, so they need to, you know, really think about what they want to do with the data and how they want to share the data, but they do have the option or the capability to start sharing this information, right? Lastly on this chart, you know, the connected devices can be used to provide additional applications and services to the consumers, right? So whether it's a connected thermostat, you know, and data related to energy consumption, for example, or, you know, potentially like a connected irrigation system that informs the consumer when the best time to, you know, water their yard is. There's some significant, you know, native and third-party applications and service opportunities that companies can package, right, package the data into consumer-facing format. And then you have the capitalization on, the slide here, the capitalization on connected home services, right? Now, one of the most exciting new areas of economic growth is the rise of home services economy, right? New residential services that can be centered around things such as, you know, cleaning, home cleaning, delivery services, maintenance, or other segments. These are really starting to pop up and can be directly attributed to kind of the connectivity and the growth of connected products, right? A good example is connected lock manufacturers, right? They can have integration to other services such as delivery services or, you know, flower delivery or dog walking services, for example. One of the customers that we work with has a strong partnership with Airbnb, for example, right? So they're able to, you know, adjust access to properties, you know, for people that may be renting them for a short period of time. So there's a lot of different opportunities that are available to these manufacturers in terms of new services, right? You know, these type of innovative integrations, you know, could facilitate, you know, a number of new home services businesses, right? Landscaping business that could access data through, you know, connected irrigation system, for example. Or one that we've heard come up more recently is kind of the elder care or in-home care services, right? And being able to manage information from connected medical type devices to remotely manage coordinate care for people that may be at home. So there's a lot of different service-centric models and service-centric business opportunities that come about through the whole concept around connectivity. So And my slide seems to be locked up. Oh, there it is. Okay, great. So, you know, kind of coming back, you know, and wrapping things up before I pass the mic back to Kurt and on to Matthew. You know, there's definitely, you know, it's a long and winding road ahead of us. But, you know, there's definitely a lot of potential for monetization when we start to look at these connected products, right? It goes much further beyond just improving the customer experience and giving them, you know, basic level of connectivity, but is what other services can we provide to the customer, through these connected products, right? You know, additional services, you know, warranty services or, you know, value added services that can be added now that we know how they're using their products and how those products are performing, right? You know, being able to take this information to improve the day-to-day functionality of the products, and, you know, how the users are using those as well. And all that really tracks back to the data, right? I mean, that's what really feeds a lot of the, new monetization capabilities or channels. It's the data that we're able to collect on the device and on how people are using it, right? And it's exciting, right? It's really going to generate a lot of new revenue opportunities for the manufacturers that that we're talking to. We're excited about it. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and pass the ball back to Kurt.
Great. Thanks a lot. Matthew Basek is up next. Matthew?
Hey, thanks for that, Kurt and Ron. I can't tell you how excited I am to talk about my favorite thing in the world, which is helping you guys and ourselves make more money. It's all about money. As Kurt already mentioned, we talk about, or I personally talked about 100 customers a year that are hardware vendors mostly, and I talk about their business strategies around moving from a predominantly hardware to this new IoT and how to help them monetize that. I'm not going to talk so much about what Flexair does. I think I'm going to do that by giving you examples, and I'll do that in a few seconds. But first, I'm going to talk about why does this all matter. And it should be pretty obvious, which is that the Internet of Things brings a new opportunity. You can go from being a hardware vendor to adding something to make more money. You're going to add software and connectivity, and by combining that, these three things, you're going to be able to introduce new business models, as Rod mentioned. And why does it matter? It's because the hardware is becoming a commodity, and we see this over and over. The example here of a thermostat vendor who has made the same thermostat for the last 20 years is seeing his price go down, and it's $40. It was $50 last year. It's $40 this year. It's going to be $36 next year. Versus a vendor who has added something to that thermostat, and they've added software and connectivity, and all of a sudden they can add $240 per device. And what, I mean, let's be honest, a thermostat is a thermostat. They turn on the temperature of your house. They both do it the same way. They just connect to a machine and turn on the furnace. But these nets have been able to add intelligence and connectivity, and all of a sudden you can charge $240. That's a pretty big leap up. It's interesting. I talk to a lot of hardware vendors, and I think they struggle in how to take advantage of that IoT and how to take advantage of getting more money for their hardware. It is really different from hardware to software. There are many differences. For example, the digital supply chain is something that they don't have to worry about. In the past, when you were a hardware vendor, you really priced your products based on your cost, and you went cost up. And software vendors tend to value-based pricing. What does it mean to the market? Your revenue recognition totally changes. Do you recognize revenue upon shipment? Do you recognize revenue upon use? All of those things change. And then my favorite, of course, is piracy. In the past, if you're worried about piracy and you shipped a hardware piece, you know, the only thing you're worried about typically was, you know, some Chinese company would make a copy and all of a sudden they would have the exact same piece of hardware just sold with a Chinese name. Nowadays, if you're talking about software and hardware together, you can pirate the software portion. And how do you avoid doing all of that? So there are lots of things to consider into becoming a hardware, a software vendor. And it brings up a whole bunch of key questions, such as, you know, how do I monetize my solution? How do I protect it from getting overused? How do I decide what the best licensing models are? How do I deliver this to our customers? And always, how do I provide a great user experience? And honestly, 80% of my conversations is, what's the next step? So instead of telling you what the next step is, I thought I'd give you a couple of very different examples of some of our customers and what they have done, and maybe it'll strike us some ideas for you guys. So the first example is a very traditional hardware vendor. They are a 180-year-old company. They have, they're in Europe. They have 160,000 employees, and their revenue is about $30 billion. And they concentrate on electrical power management. And obviously, these aren't like the example that Rod gave. These aren't, you know, consumer products. They're running industrial circuit breakers and power plants and things like that. Now, these vendors are running, this particular vendor is running into the same problem that many hardware vendors are running into, which is, you know, there's a company in China or in Taiwan that's probably going to make a circuit breaker, and most likely they're going to make the exact same circuit breaker for just a little less money, or maybe a lot less money. And so how does this particular vendor get out of that cycle of reducing the price and reducing the cost and reducing the cost and reducing the price? Instead, they decided, let's provide value to our customer. Let's take advantage of our hardware and start using that and add on our service. And the service was, wouldn't it be great if our customers could have some really good idea of how much electricity is being used in particular circuits? And so think Walmart or Macy's having a dashboard that shows the electrical use for every store and every plug, and then saying, gosh, you know, there's something wrong with this particular store, or this store is abnormal, or why is this store using way more than that store? So they added software licensing into their circuit breaker, and the software licensing says when you ship that circuit breaker, you, as part of a manufacturing process, you turn on the software on that circuit breaker, and you make sure that from here on in, it's going to be able to provide this information. It's going to capture how much is being used and send it over to a cloud, and the customers can then monitor that, as I mentioned. So from a customer perspective, they're getting a lot of information. They can become more green. And from a, from this particular vendor's perspective, they've moved away from just the cost price reduction cycle to all of a sudden they have a new value that they're providing software and services on top of that circuit breaker. They moved to a reoccurring model, so the only way you can buy this service and turn on this thing is on a subscription basis. It's going to, the pricing model is based on how much data you're bringing back and how many users are using the SaaS application. And obviously that increases their company value because everyone loves recurring revenue and leads to happy customers. How does Flexera help? We are the licensing technology that's inside of that tiny little circuit breaker. It has basically no memory. And then we provided them with a whole bunch of expertise about what customer experience should be like, how do you get your licensing done on the manufacturing floor as opposed to once it's shipped, and all sorts of other things. So that's one example of a monetization. They're pretty different from the next example, which is a truck manufacturer. They're a 111-year-old company. They are based in the U.S., they have 22,000 employees and $17 billion revenue. And They've been making these trucks in the same way for a long time, and they realized that they needed to add value to their truck. And they kind of added two different kinds of values. The first, they wanted to introduce the concept of a connected truck. And the reason are severalfold. One of them is, if I'm a buyer of these trucks, think FedEx or UPS, I want to be able to control and have information about my drivers. And you can do things like with firmware updates and over-the-air configuration updates, you can say these truck drivers can't go faster than, or these truck drivers only drive in cities, so they shouldn't go faster than 60 miles an hour. These truck drivers are interstate, and they can drive 75 miles an hour and no faster. Or these truck drivers are in Europe, and there's no speed limit whatsoever. So it gives them that kind of control, and that's important for regulation. The other reason, and the other use of this firmware, is you might have heard of this Volkswagen little issue where they were lying about output of gas and performance. And so having the ability to quickly take a truck and if you have run into regulatory issues, quickly update those trucks was really key. And one of the problems with updating trucks is in the traditional method, it takes a really long time. You take that truck, you take it to the shop. It takes about 4 hours. You have downtime during those 4 hours, and that truck isn't moving, and that means you're not making money. So by providing over-the-air firmware updates where the firmware is pushed to the truck, and then when the truck driver is ready, he shuts off his engine, presses a button, it does the firmware update, and restarts, significantly reduces the wait time. So it's an indirect monetization in that they're not charging for this capability, but they are getting a brand monetization. They're getting to be the Tesla of trucks, and that's a huge monetization play. You get lots of recognition. It also gets them to faster compliance and happier customers. How does Flexair help them? Well, we do a couple of things with this particular truck vendor. One of them is we ensure compliance at the dealers. We are making sure that a dealer who repairs these trucks is authorized and allowed to do so. And then we are working on this over-the-air update so that we can help them do this faster turnaround and control of trucks. This is also different from the next example. It's a 16-year-old company. We're getting younger and younger in these examples. They're Boston-based. They're about a $100 million company. And they have been doing network monitoring and preventing DOS attacks, denial of service attacks. And what's interesting about them is they've been traditionally selling hardware. Toaster applications that you as an enterprise, or more likely you as a network provider such as AT&T or Level 5, will buy this hardware, you'll put it into your environment, it will reroute networks when it detects DOS attacks. And what this particular vendor has done is moved away from the hardware, and they said, this hardware commodity isn't gaining anything for us, so why don't we move to pure software? The AT&Ts of the world and the Level 5s of the world can run this on a particular, their own hardware. We don't care. We're just going to monetize the software itself, and we're going to manage these DOS attacks and prevent them doing that. So the fear that this particular vendor had was, well, as soon as the hardware is gone, then it's pure software, and how do we prevent AT&T or Level 5 from accidentally making a whole bunch of copies of our software, and all of a sudden they're using our software and out of compliance, and we're losing money? So one of the things that they figured that at least 20 to 30% of their customers would go into this non-compliance because they run they would run these applications in virtual appliances, and all of a sudden vendors will accidentally make mistakes. So they did a whole bunch of work and moved to pure software, and they used our technology in a number of different ways so that for their customers, you have no hardware to purchase, at least not through this vendor. You can run your own hardware. And one of the other things we did is we took away our license server to monitor and maintain and run. So we moved from having a license server local in the hardware environment that would manage all these hardware pieces to a cloud license server. And so the licenses are managed in the cloud. The software, no longer connected to the hardware, although managing hardware, will go to the cloud and get licenses. And we're going to track every copy of that software. And if there's a copy that's made, then this producer is going to go know about that, and they're going to call up the customer and say, hey, AT&T, you bought 500 copies of this and you've got 600 running, so help me resolve that. From a producer perspective, again, they got 100% compliance, but I think really important, as I mentioned, they sell predominantly to the network providers, and now because they've put licensing to their hardware and their software, they've moved away to pure software, and now they can start selling to enterprises. So it has opened up a whole new market for them. How does Flexera help? Well, we run the license server in the cloud. We run the back office that keeps track of it. We're the license technology behind all of this, so we can keep track of all of these things, and we can keep track of all these cone events. So those were three short examples. I could have given you at least another five right off the top of my head. Hopefully these are interesting scenarios about how to monetize and what some ideas about monetization. What to do now, I've written a number of blogs, and feel free to go to a blog on monetization and converting to hardware. It is not a trivial topic. It is not something that you can do overnight. One of the first rules I will give you is stop giving away the software. Monetize it separately. So have your hardware independent of your software. When your customer buys the hardware, they also have to buy software. And that will be the first step in this process. I think the second example is embrace the hybrid. Instead of thinking just about hardware plus turning on and off a few capabilities on your hardware pieces, you want to think about SaaS and connecting, leveraging your hardware to enable all sorts of new services. So remember back to the circuit breaker vendor, you know, it's not just about circuit breakers anymore. Now it's about managing and monitoring electricity output. It's no longer about just turning on and off trucks. It's about updating them and making sure they're compliant and controlling the drivers and getting information about what kind of behavior the driver is doing. So adding more to the hardware, leveraging the hardware into something beyond just hardware plus software. The next bullet is about aligning cell compensation to strategy. It's a really key statement. I ran a session with a whole bunch of executives about 4 months ago, and that was the number one topic we talked about was how do we make sure that sales doesn't give away the hardware? How do we make sure that give away the software and just sell the hardware? So really important to manage that. And then the last bullet point is, remember, it's all about transforming. You're not going to go from day one changing from, you know, a thermostat to an intelligent thermostat. You're going to have to transform all your processes and change your many different things within your organization. And if you don't, then you're going to keep selling those those thermostats at $20, $18, $16, $14, and you're going to be out of business. Anyway, here's my contact information. I appreciate the time. I think we're going to open up for questions, Kurt.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, we are to the Q&A now. Want to continue to ask the audience to ask questions. We'll get to as many as we can. Rod, let's start with you. So there's a very specific question on consumable sales, but maybe you can generalize it a little bit. So the question is, do you have data to show that the printer cartridges sales you talked about has increased significantly for printer vendors with printers now connected to their store? Maybe you can generalize in terms of are there analytics behind all this that are quantifying the success or monetization numbers?
Sure. Well, the example I gave was actually a water softener. It was using a consumable in it. It was using salt. And they had sensors in that device that were, again, able to monitor the level of salt that was in this water softener so that once you reached a certain point that it automatically dispatched as a service, right? They provided a service and dispatched additional salt to your house, right? But that concept would obviously, it could be applicable to printers. We actually have a customer that does an appliance, a small home appliance, that uses a consumable, very similar to a printer cartridge, but it's a coffee maker, right? So it uses a coffee pod. And by having, sensors in that device, one of the issues that they had was that they, to basically maintain the performance of the device, they wanted people to use the consumables from them as opposed to consumables that were, potentially third-party consumables that didn't have the same level of quality. So being able to, monitor the consumable devices and say, okay, this one is appropriate. This is the right consumable device for this particular device, if it's a printer or a coffee machine or a water softener. That's actually, very important both from the perspective of, the monetization model of being able to charge for, additional consumables, but also for the device itself in terms of being able to make sure that it maintains properly through the life cycle that you're expecting it, right? We all, have things, I think, in our house. Car is a great example, right? You're supposed to use a certain grade of oil in that particular car to make sure that the motor runs properly and that your warranty will be maintained. Very similar for these other devices, right? Printer manufacturer could have it set up to make sure that you're using, HP printer ink in your HP printer to make sure that is going to maintain the proper function. So, there's definitely a lot of different models, I think, that work well with that concept around consumables and monitoring those.
Yep, that makes sense. Matthew, we sell hardware and give away the software. How can they break out of that cycle so they can start charging for the software?
Yeah, that's it's the number one question I get from hardware vendors, honestly. Okay, we get the vision, we get IoT, but, our sales guys are focused on giving away the refrigerator or selling the refrigerator or item, and they forget about all the value in the software. So the first thing, I heard this great solution from a vendor. They said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to sell the hardware, and it's just going to sit there. It won't do anything, or it will do very minimal processing. And until you buy the software, it's going to sit there like a rock, and the software is what turns on the capacity. So if you're thinking about, managing a manufacturing plant, the piece of hardware turns on and it doesn't manage any robots, it just sits there. And then you add software and all of a sudden it can manage 5 robots or 3 robots. So that, I think, will make a huge difference. I think the other thing that's important is to segregate the hardware warranty and service from the software warranty. And that's a very holy grail in lots of hardware vendors. That's a very tricky CEO-level kind of conversation.
Right. Okay. I'll start with Rod, but I think, Matthew, you'll want to chime in on this as well. Great question about, can you speak to the changes in investments that organizations face in shifting themselves to develop and support IoT products and services and how they can address those to reduce their risk and how much money they have to pay up front. And can you just kind of provide a quick summary on like maybe the big pieces that would change when you're doing IoT versus just a product, Rod?
Yeah, it's interesting. With a lot of the manufacturers we talk with, ultimately when they make the decision to build a connected product, which pretty much everybody seems to be doing these days, it comes down to a build versus buy decision for them, right? Do we try to build out everything internally, or do we look to buy a off-the-shelf type platform that can help us reach our strategy, right? And, you know, if you were to take the build approach, right, you really have to have the core expertise in-house to really kind of build out that strategy, right? A lot of these manufacturers, they may have a ton of mechanical engineers, you know, they build really good products, but when it comes to adding connectivity and having cloud engineers and people that are, you know, experts in Ruby and security and data management and packet refresh and all that type of stuff, it's not their core engineering expertise, so, you know, they have to then go out and buy those engineers, right? And depending on where you're located in the world, you know, you may have a lot of talent or you may not have a lot of talent in those specific areas. So, you know, it's hard to give a specific answer because I think it's, you know, it really depends on what your strategy is, what your product's going to be, what your overall approach is. And again, with a lot of the consumer goods manufacturers, I think more and more of them have realized that unless they're a very big and diverse organization with a lot of engineering in a lot of various areas, it makes more sense for them to look to, you know, an existing platform, something like an Ayler or one of the other existing platforms, to really kind of give them that jump start so that they can focus on doing what they're good at, right, and not need to worry about, you know, kind of building out expertise in areas like the cloud.
Yep, makes sense. I mean, you're saying leverage the ecosystem, build your core competency. That makes a lot of sense. Matthew, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I mean, I worked with a hardware vendor, and at this point, in the last 5 years, they've changed from having 800 hardware engineers to 50 hardware engineers and 750 software developers. We had a customer, Harbrick, who has was a startup, and one of the things they said was, you know, they were facing the build versus buy, and they decided to go with buy because they've been very experienced and they've done this in the past, and they know that when it gets to scale, and they do car operating systems, when you get to scale, it's really important to have a scalable solution that you didn't buy homegrown and aren't wasting your time building. So.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Question, let's start with Rod. I think, Matthew, you might want to chime in on this too there. There's a question about do you think that they need to have giveaways to get a leg up on the competition? Like when you're rolling out an IoT service, do you have to provide carrots to the consumer base and in order to kind of get them to lash onto the usefulness of the service? Or what have you seen in the so far, Rod?
That's an interesting question because it really comes down to a demographic type issue. I think that kind of the younger generations, you know, kind of mentioned millennials and Gen Xers and things like that. I think folks like that that are already, they're so used to sharing information, you know, the Facebook generation and the Instagram generation, that it's not really an issue for them, right? They're used to it already. They share their life online. You know, being able to have information from my washing machine go up to the cloud and go back to the manufacturer probably isn't that big of a deal. But, you know, as we start to look at other generations, you know, they may be more hesitant to have their information, you know, shared. So in certain cases, you may want to provide a carrot, right? And there's, you know, a lot of good examples of the ability to do that, especially in the consumer goods space. Being able to understand how people are using the device, right? I can have different levels of warranty. If I'm a power user and I use my, you know, I have five kids and I use my washing machine is running, you know, it's running 12 hours a day every day doing laundry, I may have a different warranty than, you know, the young urban professional who's single and uses their washing machine once a week, right?
Right.
So being able to kind of tailor things and say, you know, hey, I'm going to instant you, you know, individual who doesn't use your device, I'm going to give you a special warranty that's only going to be, you know, 20% of the cost of a regular warranty because I know you're not going to, you know, be using the machine that much. So it really, I think, depends on the device and who you're targeting.
Right, Matthew. How much the demographics feed in, Matthew?
Yeah, I would agree. PwC recently did a study of freemium, which is giveaway until, and then you buy into it. And they showed that it really doesn't work. The model is just not, you get such low adoption that it's not worth it. I think what Ron mentioned is instead of worrying about freemiums, worry about making your price models simple enough and connected enough so that there's enough flexibility so that it doesn't look expensive. If you want to try it out, it's a really cheap model. A couple things, you know, consumption-oriented models are becoming really hot in the IoT world. Instead of buying for the hardware and the software, you pay for it as you use it, or at least the software component.
Right.
So if you just want to try it out, then, you know, you have the experience, you try it out, and you like it. If you don't, you didn't lose a lot of money. Netflix for the IoT.
Yeah, great. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of today's eCast. I want to thank Rod and Matthew for sharing their insights and expertise on development and monetization of compelling IoT applications. We at Open Systems Media, ALA Networks, and Flexera Software want to thank you, the audience, for attending today and contributing excellent questions remotely. We did not get to all of them, but I'm sure representatives from ALA and Flexera will be back in touch, and you certainly feel free to contact them as well. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen in 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.